Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for our third weekly roundup brought to you by Join Cycling. We've had a lot of Dot 1 racing this week. It heats up again next week, so we'll have the recaps and previews of those races, as well as the UAE Tour where SD Works were back in full force. Also, a lot of doping news this week, about four or five separate articles or pieces of news. It all came at once for some reason this week, as well as Nzue and Lefebvre asking whether we should shorten Grand Tours, my favorite topic of this week, a topic dear to my heart. But where are you, Benji? You're in Turkey.
Yeah, I'm in Antalya for the Tour of Antalya. Got invited by the organizers and I'm making some content here, but I'm also just kind of enjoying the race itself. It was fun being close to a race again, but it did remind me that thing where the closer you are to a race, the less you're aware of what's happening outside it and inside it, even in the race itself, because you're so busy surrounding a race, it's hard to figure out, oh, this guy lost 1 minute today, blah, 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 blah. And then I need to catch up with 17 fucking races this week. Then I need to figure out where to watch it. Then I go to Discovery Plus where I'm supposed to watch it. Then it's telling me that I can't watch that in Turkey. So then I don't know where to watch it. Then I Google, where can I watch this race? Then I end up on YouTube trying to figure out where I can watch the last kilometer of, I don't fucking know what race. So that's my life the last few days.
I didn't know that on Eurosport Player they have ads on a paid player.
Yes.
I pay the thing and then there's advertising in it. And they can't even fill the ad slots.
It apparently depends on the country and the prize also depends on the country. So it's major differences.
But it
hurts.
They can't even fill the ad slots, so they're just running like Eurosport content slots in the slots during the race. I'm like, just show the race in that case. If no one's paying you, just show the race because I'm paying a subscription for it. This makes no sense. You don't need to show me sailing that's coming on. Exactly. I'm already paying the subscription.
Like back in the day on Eurosport, when we were still watching Eurosport for cycling, then we had those like top 10 things of sports, like top 10 funniest moments in this sport, top 10 whatever, that would like play as advertisements in between, just like you're saying. Like, that was fucking torture, man.
In America, I think there's a solution now with the BR Sports add-on to Max.
Yeah,
it gives you a lot of cycling coverage. I'm led to believe Australia, apparently Discovery Plus might get rolled out there, which would be your solution. So we do have some. It's now the middle of February. We are like 2 weeks away from Omloop. We might have some solutions. Luke is telling me that I've selected the wrong stream. There is a general Eurosport TV stream and then separate ad-free streams. Well, that's not clear to me because I just click on watch and then click on Tour of Mercia.
That's not a user error. That's a user experience error. That's the application.
Like, what? Why would they show the TV stream on the player stream if there's... I'm learning. At least I can watch it, I guess, legally, most races in Andorra. Okay. Yeah. Speaking of those races, this week, the biggest race was UAE Tour Women, which was three sprint stages, and then the Queen stage was up Jebel Hafit. We had SD Works here with Capecchi and Vibers as the overpowered lead out, with Guarishi now like second last woman in the lead out. And then GC contenders were Riolini, Elisa Longoborghini, who went 1-2 last year. No Charlotte Kuhl, so the sprints we thought would be a bit dull. That was the case. The first two sprints, Vibers won easily. FDJ did try and get in the breakaway on one of the days and did get in the break the first two stages. No one else really tried. Queen stage, though. What's Trek doing here, Benji? With, like, they need to make... So Jebel Hafit has a difficult section about two-thirds of the way up or in the middle. And basically, if you've got a pure climber wanting to drop Gobecki, who's in the virtual lead, you should want to make the race hard up to that point because it levels off then. Where, say, Gobecki could come back to people. And yeah, they really only went at 8Ks to go with ELB still in the group.
Is there something there where they're still trying to bet on the two horses, that they value the legacy of Longo Borghini that high that they want to keep her? Galini's attack fails, but it's obviously going to fail if you do it at 8 kilometers to go with a larger group. So, yeah.
I guess the thing, it worked last year. She kind of did that last year and it worked, but the level is different here and the level is going up. They did her feet quicker this year by a minute and 20 seconds. Rialini beat her own time of last year and got put on a minute by Capecchi and Neve Bradbury in the end. So the overall level, like Brunel, is all going up.
Were there different environmental factors? Like, how was the weather compared to last year?
They did more watts. They did more watts.
Okay.
Like Bradbury did a really good performance. Brunel did a really good performance. I would say it helped that Mavi Garcia in the middle of the climb just paced for like 15 minutes with everybody in her wheel. She did the same watts as Gobecki just about, but got put on 30 seconds because basically she got to the crest, led Gobecki there, and then Gobecki said, thanks very much, got to a flat bit, and then dropped both of them and went across to Bradbury. So really good performance from Bradbury. Just Gobecki was way, way too strong. I sort of forgot how good she was on Tourmalet because I was so focused on Vollering last year in the Tour, but she still came sixth on that stage, and then a Uni Puerto like this should suit her more, and yeah, she wins, and SC Works dominating from the start.
But I feel like Tourmalet is a thing that happens at the peak moment in the season when you expect her to be at her best. For some reason, Gobecki doing this in a technically lead-up race, which the UAE Tour technically is, that feels even bigger to me, winning on her feet, because that's an extra confirmation on top of what we already saw, to the point that I'm starting to consider other possibilities. I don't remember fully, but I already vaguely remember her hinting at the fact that she said, oh, it might be fun to compete with the riders on SDWorks in the future again at some point. So contractually, I'm looking forward to what are they going to do? Or is she going to split up from SDWorks at some point? And will that lead to more GC opportunities outside of that? Because GC Gobecki is much more real than GC Wout has ever been.
Yeah, that's true. She's probably like a top 3 GC contender in the world. So she is.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, and she's out of contract. I was checking, is Vibers. She's out of... No, she's not out of contract, sorry. Vollering is out of contract, as well as Fischer Black, Blanca Vash, Unica, Marcus. I mean, usually in women's cycling, there aren't too many long-term deals. So it's not many riders are under long-term contract. Who do you think they keep? SD Works. I know they got a healthy budget, but to keep... To have Vibers salary on the books and to pay Vollering and Gobecki, I'm not sure they're going to be able to keep both. And I'm not sure, based on what you just said, Gobecki said she'll want to stay.
Yeah, there's like there's an interesting factor there, as in we heard some vague rumor. Oh, I don't know who said it. Someone said that it was a vague rumor that UAE had a potential offer of like 1 million for Vollering at some point, which I'm not sure if that's fully confirmed. That was just a rumor in an article somewhere. And I hope that Luke can figure it out while I'm talking. Marijn de Vries.
Thank you very much, Marijn.
That was a thing. I think that when it comes to value, she's probably worth that.
Was that from me?
What do you mean?
Did I put that out like a year ago? And then people report that as the rumor?
Probably not. I think she said it came
probably
somewhere from
sourced,
someone.
Yeah.
A director source than the man that's sitting in front of me right now on the laptop screen, but I think she's worth that. How valuable is Gobecki compared to Vollering? And I'm thinking, like, I think Vollering's still more expensive.
Yeah.
But I think Gobecki is nearing the 700K in value.
Oh, I'd pay Vollering probably 2 million at this point.
If Vollering's a million.
Yeah. 70% of her value seems to make sense. So, yeah. I would pay. Vollering is so much better that she can just win the Tour de France, especially as they're making the mountain stages harder now. Like, mountain stages this year, even harder. She's going to be unstoppable. Like, she will unless they do something silly. Yeah, unless they do something like that. But, I mean, if I was in charge of a team, probably I wouldn't have her wait for mechanicals of domestiques. So I'm not too concerned about that happening again. Especially if you got 2 million in her. She needs to win the race. I'd be like, listen, Chantal can fucking fix it herself. She'll make her own way back. Demi, you stay at the front. So, yeah, they're so good. And I think pray to God that they split up the team. Like, this year might be a bit, last year was a bit tough, I must say. This year, Becky on her feet already, not looking too great. And Weber's dominating the sprints. Charlotte Cool wasn't here. And I must say, she didn't win them by 10 bike lengths. Consoni, if she was in the second wheel in Coponi's position, I think might have come close on stage two. But the classics and the Ardennes in particular are looking like SD Works should run away with them. And then Vollering, it's if she wants to win all three of the big stage races.
And in addition to that, Wibus's pull on Gibella Feed was pretty extraordinary. And on top of that, I think Kopecky and Vollering might actually be sprinting for the victory at LBL instead of Strade this year, because Kopecky hinted at her doing it or said that she'd be doing LBL, and if that's the case, then she can't fucking win that race. Sorry for the swearing today. I don't know what's up with me.
In Turkey, I don't know. Yeah. Stage four, we should mention big shout out to FD Suez and the other team, Phoenix de Koenig. Phoenix de Koenig, whoever's the director at Phoenix de Koenig and FD Suez, particularly you saw in the Tour de France Femme last year where they nearly won a stage and then won the next day, Phoenix de Koenig. FDJ Suez got in the break twice in the sprint stages, two of the three sprint stages this year in the UAE Tour, instead of just waiting for some sprint with Vibas, and they won. They won stage four with Amber Crack. They called the Peloton's bluff. They called SD Works, who were down a rider's bluff. I can't believe more teams don't do it. Like, if you put the Tour de France Femme showed last year where so many breakaways all of a sudden won, Bauernfein, Norsgaard, Van de Velde. That if you put a modicum of pressure on SD Works, that they will not be able to chase or look to other teams to chase. So Sarah Tizzett, other teams, Molestar did try on her feet, I think, before. But yeah, it can work. It's not impossible. Gladys Verhulst, I think, tried one day, and Krak succeeded today. So big shout out to them.
Yeah, for certain. I think Cornelis and Wouters are the two DSs in the team of Phoenix this race, and Bare for FDJ. So shout out to those three people at the moment. They deserve the little shout out here. Don't know who of them invented it, but
I couldn't have stomached a sweep, so I'm glad. It was glad that someone else won the stage. But in terms of GC, Kopecky wins 13 seconds ahead of Bradbury, who maybe with a Bauernfein setting a harder pace early, I don't know, could she have put Kopecky under more pressure? Garcia finishes GC in third on 44 seconds. So I think she'll take that as well. She is not on a new team. There was the merger, right, of Liv and Alula's women's team. So she's sort of in a new structure, I would say. 40 years old, getting the job done, third in a World Tour stage race. Congrats to her as well. Any other women's cycling news or takeaways from this? Benji, anyone poke their head out to you as one to watch in the future?
I'm just disappointed Cole wasn't here, first
Me
of
too,
all.
Yeah.
That's like the thing that I was kind of disappointed by. Yeah, she was sick, but I really wanted to see that. And I know, obviously, Kopecky is the big name there on Jebel Hafid. But if we take a look at the full results of that top 20, I guess I expected more on a stage like this from a Szczesny again. Like, we've said this a few times.
Oh, she crashed the base.
Okay. I didn't see that one. So, I don't know, like, at this point, I feel like Little Trek should 100% pull the card of Real anymore on these stages. That's just
she should be the leader.
In
the Boston State, she's the leader. We've got to drop Kopecky. She's got to go on the steepest part of the climb because she's super light.
I think fifth rider, vaguely remember, Marion Bunel or something, French rider, 19 years old. That's a hell of a performance from a Saint-Michel rider. So No offense to Saint-Michel, it's a solid Conti team, but if she goes to a World Tour team, she most likely will make a proper step up again, is my expectation. So that's a rider that I'm intrigued by, and I hope to see a bit more of her later in the season. Got 13th on the Wollongong Hill stage as well, so it's not coming out of nowhere either, but...
Second on the Wollongong Hill Challenge behind Gigante on that like event they did. So that's not in the results anywhere. So she's obviously very, very slight, like Riolini. Not quite as small as Riolini, but very, very slight. So I'd say the hustle and bustle is a problem for her and the flat. But if you put her on a steep climb, she seems to go. So she's, in her last year of her contract with Saint-Michel Mavic Aubert 93, that just rolls off the tongue, that team name. I'd be interested to see if FDJ or Cofidis, surely they'll be knocking next year. Although Saint-Michel actually, in the French races, there's usually a group one when it splits up, and there's usually a rider in there. I'm always by them, to be honest. They pull their weight. As you know, Benji and I are doing the Flandrian Challenge, or at least attempting it, in March, in about a month or a month to the day, and I am using the Join Cycling training app to get me in shape to actually complete the 300 or so Ks over cobbles in rainy conditions there.
410!
Is it 410 Ks? I can't count. I can tell I wouldn't have been a good finance broker. I just said it was 300. I just, 100, only 110 Ks short. I'm sure those 110 Ks will hurt, but I put in the right number of Ks in my Join Cycling app program. When I actually, I decided I'm doing the Classics program. Teetered towards the one-day program or the Classics program. We're doing the cobbles, the Classics program. So I put in the Ks I'm doing, the meters of elevation gain, the days to my event, and it adapts and creates the training plan catered to that event with the days leading up to it to get me in the best possible shape for that event. I've put in max availability, but not, I haven't put in pro because that'd be too much. That's what I like about Join is that like I can kind of self-coach within the training program, because if I put in max availability and like max level, like pro level, I can't do 20-hour weeks off the base of what I've been doing. So I'm intermediate with good availability. And this week I did some they weren't nice at all. I did some VO2 intervals at altitude and, they were effective, but they were hard, and I enjoyed them. But this in the winter and in the snow coming this week, I'm gonna have to crank out 3 hours down on the save. Anyway, if that's not my plug, isn't enough in my experience, because I really enjoyed it and I haven't stuck to a cycling plan like this really ever. So it certainly worked for me. I think it could work for you as well. Listeners to Lantern Rouge will benefit from a 30-day free trial period. You don't even need to use your credit card, and before the 30 days is up, Join will email you to let you know it's about to expire and offer you a 6-month subscription at a discount. And I must say, compared to competitors in the market, compared to a real life coach, the pricing of Join is very, very competitive, in my opinion. But you can do the comparisons yourself. But I think, and then another discount on top of that is very, very competitive. So go and check it out. If you're cycling or want to get a bit fitter or want to try out a structured or even flexible and adaptive training program, because I've really enjoyed using it, and I'm glad to have them sponsor these weekly shows.
Now let's go through these men's results for a second. Tour de la Provence, French race, 4 stages. Mats Pedersen basically dominated the first 3. And then, so kind of unexpected, Tom van Asbroek won the 4th one, ahead of Sam Bennett. Didn't see that one coming, but bizarre. Van Asbroek's always like a good teammate in the team of Israel, for example, at the moment, but also in the career that he had at every team he was in. So it's nice to see one of the good guys take a victory here. Not that Mats Pedersen is not a good guy. He's also
doing
a lead
guy, out.
So, yeah.
Leading out Hofstetter. Right? He was doing a lead out and the finish line came too early. And he won.
Well, is that because they thought the finish line was later and that's why all the sprinters finished behind him? Or is it because
I don't even know. Maybe they're going for UCI points. That really wouldn't make too much sense, I don't think. But
no, I think you're right there. But it was a good finish.
Yeah, it was. It was good. Just like with UAE Tour, it was good to see someone else win. Pedersen was just too good for everybody here. Like these uphill drags and shit weather, like without the big guns here, he's just going to clean everybody. Yeah. Obviously, young, talented French rider Zangler. I was hoping I did think, okay, like to take that next step when on the Minosk stage where Pedersen pulled, I was like, you got to come out of his wheel and beat him here. But he didn't. But
yep.
He finished second on GC and Raul Garcia Piana third.
Is the Minosk stage a bit of an example of what Milan should have done on the last stage of Valenciana, where he should have started attacking or sprinting early or going early and spending some of his energy knowing that he can dominate the sprint anyway? Because Pedersen does that in Bamer's Classic last year, now again in this stage, and hell of an impressive victory, one of the most impressive ones of the season, and love seeing that. But expectations for Pedersen, I won't say that Poval's changed that for me. I've still got the same expectations for Pedersen. I expect him to be a competitor in MSR. I expect him to be a competitor in Paris-Roubaix. RVV is slightly difficult.
You can only beat who's in front of you, but if you're being uncharitable, you would say, you know, he's beating up in the French Farmers Protest Classics the last week and a half. They literally had a protest in stage one of Assez.
Yeah, that's true. The Farmers Protest Classic.
So, listen, I support, and they're in Catalonia too.
The farmers?
Go for gold. The Catalan farmers, they tell you the time, the day. Like,
aww.
What more can you want? Let's not do that. There's not much cycling in Catalonia, at the until Volta Catalunya's all in the south. But what was I talking about? Yeah, I mean, to your point, does this mean I think Pedersen's going to drop Van der Poel on the Poggio? No. In fact, is he too good too early? I don't know. I think he's always kind of good in these races. So it's just good to see him win.
What do you think about his anti-altitude mindset? As in, he said, I won't do an altitude camp. Fuck that shit. If my coach says it, I say no. He was pretty strict about it. Like, for classics, not everyone does it. For GC, it's seemingly so important that everybody does it. Is it for classics that important that every rider should do it?
It depends. Like, if you do it and you're mentally completely cooked, then no, you shouldn't do it. And he already could have, you know, he's still, if you look at his classics results, an elite classics rider. He's won the world championships.
For sure.
He's podium Tour of Flanders.
He would have won Roubaix if Ro didn't take him out. No offense to Ro, but...
Don't get me careful with that. He could come to, on his Instagram story, remember, afterwards. physically, of course, if Pedersen did an altitude camp, was doing the hardcore nutrition stuff, physically he might have that 2 to 4 min watts per kilo that he might is missing, that he is missing in the classics, got dropped on Kemmelberg and co in Gent-Wevelgem, but he also wins a lot of races and he also has an incredible rain buff, so maybe he just needs a really wet and cold Tour of Flanders. And then all the guys who've been on a calorie deficit before altitude waste away. I don't know. So I would say I wouldn't change too much with Mads Pedersen. He's kind of doing his own thing. I would be... What do you think about the Klerk? Seeing the Klerk in different colors was strange, right?
Very different. Yeah. It's so weird.
They and didn't need someone like that, though.
That's true, but them calling him Tractor with an EK...
No, we can't have that.
My Flemish soul is not accepting it. I'm not okay with that.
It's What's
not
a tractor in Flemish?
Tractor.
With a K or just the same as English?
Ace. Oh, fuck. I don't even know.
You
I don't know
speak
my
Dutch.
I think it's with AK? No, fuck. It's AC. No, that's English. I don't know.
Anyway, Mads Pedersen looking good. Alex Kirsch still his best support rider. And... He needs Tom Schoens in there for these sort of races. I think they were missing Schoens, but he's doing other things.
they were missing it, but he still won 3 stages.
Yeah, but the Minosk was interesting and exciting, but
yeah.
5K 4% climb. I was like, where's Trek gone? They evaporated. True. And they have an Arkea Samsic looking like Roglic and Vingegaard on Galibier. Garcia Piana and Kostya hitting him with the 1-2. Great tactics from them. I really like the way they rode. Over the Middle East for the men, Tour of Oman. There was a Muscat Classic first. Muscat Classic. It was only on YouTube live stream. Real ones, you all would have been up at 9 a.m. on the Oman Sport TV live stream. OGs know that one. And Finn Fisher Black was just too good here.
I swear, I don't know which race it was. Was it last year or 2 years ago that we would start watching a UAE TV before the actual Eurosport coverage started in actual Arabic? What race was that?
Too many. I think it was Oman. They have wall-to-wall coverage.
Yeah.
Literally a breakaway. Three guys run 40 km/h, the peloton doing 100 watts behind them. Wall-to-wall coverage. I mean, credit to the guys commentating it. I don't know. It's good to have something different. But Finn Fisher Black, he took his form from Saudi, where he was the strongest on Skyviews, and he dropped everyone after Yates let him out in that race. And then stage one, Caleb Ewan looked pretty sharp, got a decent lead out. Paul Magnier looked fast. They used Lamperti as his lead out again, like they did in Mallorca. And Ewan just... I think Ewan looks kind of back to normal, Benji.
Well, I never thought he was, like, washed. I thought his results were washed. As in, his
positioning
was
shit. Yeah, he never looked slow, right?
He was always in the fight towards the sprint. But him winning a fucking Tour of Oman sprint, no offense to the Tour of Oman, but that's not a high-level sprint that I expect him to suddenly be fighting for positions assertively in the Tour de France, you know? So I don't think that will necessarily make the difference, you know? So... I'm not sold that he's going to win like 17 wins now, but I'm happy that he's winning again for his mental capacity. You know, that will help him mentally. He's going to be with a better mindset in the next few races. One last thing about this race, though, Lamperti on Kurayat was better than I expected. Like,
yeah, what the hell? So if you don't know, stage two was a 3K 7% climb. I think Herrada won last year. It's probably Ulisi, Herrada, Puncher, climb.
Yep.
And I was expecting Fisher Black to win. He did win. There was no coverage because the weather. It's the first time I've ever seen a rainy stage in the Middle East. And basically, Lamperti was second. So is he the next Peter Sagan? I suggest American fans just run with that. Just say that in Richmond, when Sagan won, the idea of Lamperti Sagan 2.0 was born, and here he is. So Lamperti is the next coming. But yeah, that was a very, very impressive win indeed. And we've got the queen stage of that coming up in a couple of days. So Oman, unlike the European races, doesn't finish on a Sunday. We're recording Sunday evening now. It finishes later in the week. Back to Europe. Taylor Swift, air miles. We've actually unnecessarily logged too many emissions here, going back and forth from Europe, Benji. So we're going back to the Iberian Peninsula. Murcia was yesterday. Hilly race. Looked exciting. Coverage started too late.
Wait.
Oh, you want to fly all the way to Colombia?
No, I'll change our lineup, and I'm going to put Colombia in between Murcia and Figuera. There we go.
So, we're not even going to stay on the Iberian Peninsula. Okay, fair enough. You had the environment. Basically, there's a small group after a longish climb, and Wellens and O'Connor attacked. Koos missed it, and then... O'Connor straight up dropped Wellens on like a not that steep climb, like maybe a 15-minute climb. And he just full cracked him. He wasn't really attacking. So impressive performance from O'Connor. He's a good all-round racer for a GC rider. Like he went with Asgreen and Moritz on that short climb in the Tour break stage. Like he can do a little bit more than your average skinny climber. And he goes clear,
got the brains.
Good descent. Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes I think he does too much work. Sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He like with but he does. Sometimes he was too good. He was too good. He dropped Wellens and
mate.
Tratnik then dropped everybody in the group behind and came second and caught Wellens.
Jan's on point, but also he was on point going into the classics last year, and I just hope that he has a role a bit higher up in the Jumbo lineup, even though it's very difficult because they've got amazing riders all around. But I just like Jan Tratnik, so I wanted to see him roam the streets of Flanders in the front. But
he's in all the classics this year, don't worry.
Good signs for Tratnik and Wellens. I'm looking forward to them in opening weekend, etc. Through Colombia, back to not, we haven't gone there yet, South America. Cavendish won a stage, Gaviria won a stage. Well, first of all, the lead out of Astana looked absolute dog shit. And then suddenly it actually looked very good. But then again, it's not again. It's against the Estonian national team, so I'm not sure it really counts. I don't know, but Lars is there, a sprinter, I think.
Okay.
Why is the Estonian national team in Colombia again?
I think Carlos told me some reason. There's some political, not a political reason, but there's some, like, someone knows someone.
Friendship politics.
Yeah, because I saw the lineup. It's like the, what the hell are polar bear doing in Arlington, Texas? Why the hell is there a Baltic national team competing against Petrobike and whatever Team Sevilla's on? And the Colombian national team. Yeah, they're out there. Gaviria won a stage, but yeah, Cav. Interestingly, they put Mercu second last in the Rickart role. I think that's an admission that he just doesn't have the peak 15 to 20 second power anymore. He doesn't, I don't think, to compete with a Van Poppel or of MVDP or a Laporte. So they put him in the Rickart placement role, and then Boll was last man, who probably does have that power, just struggles with positioning. And yeah, they got it right. Cav wins, but as you said, like, I mean, listen, we never saw Astana do a train in any race that good to set up Cav last year. So it's an improvement, whatever the competition here is. It is.
Yeah. They need Thomas in a Grand Tour, though.
Lushenko can do it. Lots would be good in that role. GC stage, Carapaz and EF were absolutely hyper-aggressive on the Alto Divino climb. Attack, 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 attack. But Contreras, actually, despite Carapaz winning the stage, Contreras, who took time in GC in a breakaway, who was on Astana and Quickstep years ago and now is back in South America, he kept his GC lead. And I told you to watch out for Caicedo. I told you.
You did.
On Petrobike, he was cooking. So he came second, but I think the last stage of today is the sprint stage. Contreras should hold on to the GC lead. The big news from this, Benji's Quintana. He got full shelled on the Queen stage.
How is that shocking? He wasn't good before he retired outside of Arkea, like
Tour de Loire. This is his Tour de France, February Mickey Mouse races.
But it's
he
not
was
in
always
France.
Cooking.
But it's not in France.
True, if he's not in the Provence region, he can't. But he got full shelled. Unzue, I think, was in Colombia because obviously Telefonica and Movistar, you know, they're in Colombia as well. Quintana's just been re-signed. It's a big race for them with Sosa and Quintana at the race.
Went great.
Did not go well. Also, the same time as he touches down, Quintana's doctor is reported to go on trial in connection to the 2020 Tour de France raid. So Freddie Alexander Gonzalez Torres is accused of giving a banned substance to the Colombian climber. He was the doctor for Quintana, according to Cycling News and Laura Veslow, and the AFP. And he's due to go on trial in September in Marseille. So that Marseille prosecutor who maybe got it wrong a couple of the years, but maybe got it right one of the years, he does wake up. Usually he wakes up, sets his alarm for June 30, but he might have, he's got something here or someone's on trial here. But
mate.
Yeah.
The Central Office for the Fight Against Threats to Environmental and Public Health. The
just
abbreviation
rolls off the
is OCLAESP. Why do you OCLAESP?
Yeah, but in French it might make more sense.
L'Office Central pour la Bataille Against.
No, there's no B in it.
I don't fucking know anymore. Des environnements, environnement et santé publique? I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah.
That was longer.
And so, yeah, this is one of the biggest parts of the doping news this week. And what's really curious to me is that these doctors are going on trial. In both in France here, and then in the Dr. Minar in Operación Ilex, we'll talk about in a second, we might go straight to it, the doctor of Lopez, and reportedly Caja Rural due to the leaked documents. We'll link the Marker article and the AFP articles in the show notes if you want to read further. They're pretty, the Marker one in particular is like a very long, long form piece I'd recommend reading. The doctors are on trial, but they're not going after the riders. And I don't know if that's a, because in Germany, doping is and Austria is a criminal offense if you are the rider doing it. I'm not sure if that's the case in Spain and France. But that's kind of the strange thing, right, Benji, is that a doctor can get, maybe if Minar or Gonzalez Torres get done, but then the riders don't get done, not just legally or criminally, but then the UCI. And then the weird thing is that Lopez is still, I think, provisionally suspended. He's not full suspended.
I agree, but I also feel like we don't hear anything from the UCI on most of these things. It's like, on many of these segments, complete silence, which maybe there's an investigation going on that we don't know about, but I like to get a blood that you're at least looking at it. Because right now, I feel like it's just happening outside of the UCI, and the UCI just sitting there, like, looking at other people that might have been caught in the last week that we'll get to after this, because this is a whole doping episode, apparently. But it's on, in both occasions, I fully agree with you. And like the Operacion Ilex that you just mentioned, quick summary for that. Guardia Civil formed a doping network roughly under Dr. Minar, like you mentioned, but it had multiple phases, right? You had the Miguel Angel Lopez phase, the Caja Rural phase, and was the EFAPEL thing not related to Minar in some shape or form as well?
Oh, I don't know.
Because if I look in that same article that we have linked on our notes, just mentioning that for a second, and you control F and you tick in EFAPEL.
Yes, yeah.
Then they talk about EFAPEL too. And like these three segments, it's a fucking wide network, man. And it expresses as well in the article that there was exporting of whatever is included in this article when it comes to consumable stuff to three regions all over Europe for these specific stakeholders in this. And it's just an article that you have to read. I literally can't explain it. It's so much. There's so much in this article.
Because they have the leaked
documents.
I'm scared
of missaying it.
Well, they have... Oh, it's like Dr. Minar was basically...
dodgy.
Yeah. And then there's the... apparently, menotropin is what Superman Lopez allegedly took during the Giro, and that gave him a reaction in his leg. And that's why he abandoned, according to the Marker article.
Is it a story that we've heard, like, rumored more than a year ago?
Yeah, yeah.
So many times. And I feel like it's finally written down somewhere. Because when I Googled it, I never could find it in the past. Now it's, like, written down, the alleged thing that he put allegedly menotropin in his body, and then he got ill or something from it, and then he had to abandon the Giro. Sorry, but that's... karma's a bitch, man. Like, that's kind of funny, that storyline.
Bro, why is he taking in Hungary for three flat stages? Is he stupid?
Prepping for Etna, my man. Come on.
Etna, they always do low watts per kilo. So, and again, that's dumb. So, both shouldn't be doping, and you've picked the wrong stages.
Although menotropin, what is that? Is that
I must
like
confess, I don't know what menotropin does.
Is that a menstruation drug or something, menotropin?
Yeah, it's like a... it's a hormone, a very old school, strange stuff. But yeah, well, again, like, are the UCI provisionally suspending Lopez on the basis that they're waiting for the Guardia Civil Operacion Ilex to play out and hope that sort of the Guardia Civil do the legwork, conclude that he was doing this with this rider, this with this rider, this with that rider, bang, criminal case done, and they can just suspend people? Because what this article from Marker is saying that really, the Guardia Civil aren't that fussed about going after the riders.
Yeah.
They just want to go after the doctor. They're struggling to really find a concrete link that he delivered this substance to this person who gave it to this rider, because it's going from hand to hand to hand to hand. And then that rider took it in this competition, and that's it, probably in the too hard basket, and they're just going after this doctor.
The leaked documents that are in that, to me, it looks like, for me, that looks like evidence.
I mean, some of the stuff, if that leaked stuff is true and there's team representatives procuring it from this doctor and the doctor gets done, then I'm sorry. that UCI has to do something.
Like, for example, looking at the whole Caja thing that we passed by, the fact that the only person in this entire thing that's going to be having something come to him outside of Minar is also the Euskaltel manager, apparently, that allegedly would have leaked it, leading to this situation. So I'm like, man, that's the guy that, well, he obviously did it in selfish interests, like, most likely, if he did it. Got to put an if in there just in case. But allegedly he's done it. Jesus Izquierda, I think his name is. About that, like, how the only guy of that whole situation that is like,
that's the crazy thing.
Seeing consequence, that makes no sense in my head.
So yeah, Mark is saying Caja will be left without sanction. That's from the police. I don't know that that's from the UCI, and could even receive compensation depending on how the resolution of its complaint for the revelation of secret documents ends. Because after the interested leak that showed conversations between several of its cyclists with Minar, with the leak was with the intention of damaging its image. The legislation in Spain says that in these cases, the final recipient has no legal repercussions and is a victim, i.e. Caja. Jesus Escurdia, former manager of Euskaltel, he left straight after this happened, would face a 4-year sanction if it's confirmed that he's the one who leaked. So,
calling Caja a victim is a fucking joke, man.
I guess the principle is this was an ongoing case.
Yeah.
It was not concluded. The Guardia Civil hadn't taken it to be prosecuted yet. And so he's jumped the gun and you can't do that. And he did it. Why did he do it during the Vuelta?
Let's be honest about it. He did it for selfish reasons.
So, like, could he have sent it? The UCI has a whistleblower page where you can upload things. So he could have sent it there. But it got circulated amongst all the teams and the organizers just about during the Vuelta.
And the press.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very, very strange what's going on. In terms of Quintana, I also think it's like, remember when I was saying, okay, he took tramadol, but then he got blacklisted for a year, and I was sitting here going, why? Like, he's good enough to be on a team, he's training, why is he blacklisted? And then Baudin gets, no suspension. What's the go? It makes you think, like, the peloton or the teams, like, they know something more. Or they don't know, but they're a bit more clued in, unsurprisingly. They're a bit more clued in than the public. Yeah. About things that might be lurking or happening. Maybe they weren't, because maybe this was a huge shock to Movistar and Nzue, this being announced this week, because certainly not news they would have wanted to hear. Should we round off the doping news, Benji, because there's so much of it this week?
Talking about doping again, Tolhoek has apparently tested positive on his A sample for anabolic steroids. So, androgenic steroids, anabolic androgenic steroids. So, basically,
just
the same
steroids,
thing.
Yeah.
Just steroids, which that's during his time where he was at Trek, not during his time at Sabgal. Because if it happens at Sabgal, no offense to the Portuguese circuit, but we're kind of used to that. We're kind of used to the Portuguese circuit having.
No, they never pop. They never pop. That's the crazy thing. They never popped, and then the police raided their houses, and they had a treasure trove in there last year.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I was like,
"What the
fuck?"
Thing. They don't get caught red-handed. They get caught red-handed at home.
What's going on? Yeah, yeah.
But first of all, is the Portuguese circuit the cleanest it's ever been? Knowing that a Vorarlberg rider won the Tour of Vuelta Portugal last year.
No, genuinely, like, all jokes aside, I think there have been some steps to clean things up, because
I think so too.
It was the Wild West, like, in the last 5 years. But the reality is here, Benji, the serious thing about this is this goes against Trek, which is that this is what is so, like, we can talk about Vorders being mad at Igita not using a Cannondale in an event at a Grand Fondo in November. This here, if he gets fully sussied, This goes as a strike against Little Trek, I'm pretty sure, because he was still under contract with them and the season hadn't ended.
But correct.
By the middle of November, when did he test positive? 27 November. He's done. He's with the new team. He's given the Trek bike back. He's given the kit back. That's it. October 30 is probably see you later. But this goes against the Trek team if it goes through. So that's reason to move the date for the seasons to October 30.
Is that an utter argument towards the whole thing of like the season should be divided differently, as in should, and then October? Because if you pop in the end of the season in November, December, then you're literally striking against your own team, even though it might not have been with the old team. We don't know that. That's something we don't know. That situation is behind the scenes and that we can't know. But he was one of the stories this week. We had Bonamour being sussied. That's how you wrote it in the title. Being sussied for biopassport violation. Basically, an abnormality in his biopassport. If you don't know what a biological passport is, basically kind of like they know what your normal values are, and then they test every now and then. And if you suddenly have abnormal values in your system, then they know something might be off. And with some riders, that means doping. With some other people's, that might actually be a medical condition. Like we had Torsten Tram, but that is rare, eh? That is rare compared to the doping side.
Yeah, that would have been more like the doctor saw Tram's bloods and was like, holy shit, you got, I don't know, some
markers
count
for cancer.
Is out of line and called him, thank God. So, but yeah, the look at your hematocrit, your free reticulite count. I don't know, I have to look at Horner's when he released
again.
What the hell is that?
A free for living.
And the Alicon. If you want to look at it, look at the... you can look at some of the arbitration for the CAS hearings. Jaime, was it Rosson? Jaime Rosson, who got done. They really stepped through in that judgment, all the parameters, and that was a biopassport successful prosecution, one of the most recent ones. Because remember, I think Kreuziger got off. He successfully defended his biopassport. So they are hard. If the person suspended really mounts a fight, it goes to CAS, and it's a tough fight. But Rosson, and I got to make sure I got his name right, because I was talking about doping. Yeah, I got it right. Jaime Rosson, got it right. And who was the fellow that beat Froome in 2011? And because Froome was clean, he got the win.
Kobo Sebo?
Kobo. And Kobo got done on the biopassport, but he had no money to defend it. but I'm pretty sure...
Man was too broke to defend himself.
He was.
It's like Ulysses versus Froome when it comes to the Salbutamol.
Yep. Yeah. So it's whether Bonamore has that kind of cash, because the biopassport are the ones. It's not like when you test positive for anabolic steroids and then the B sample confirms it. It's like, well, unless you can prove contamination and then you're still probably getting suspended and it's going to get a sentence reduced to 2 years. With the biopassport, there's more room for interpretation, but I dare say the UCI doesn't often go for a biopassport suspension. So when they do, one assumes they have seen something. But
that's just something to monitor. Wait, with you actually meant suspended, just to be clear. Not suspected or something like that.
No, sussied like means suspension.
Okay. Yeah, man, that's
everyone
very
knows
different.
That. But
no. Sussied is an Among Us term at this point.
I don't know what Among Us is.
Really? We got to change that.
But yeah, the UCI was a short release. Said unexplained abnormalities. Decathlon, Agizer, Le Mondial say that it relates to a time when he wasn't on the team, I believe. So beforehand. So that was an incredible amount of doping news. I don't think we've ever discussed doping for this long on the podcast because come this week.
Is that a sign that something's wrong? I think that's an important question, because I feel like in the last year, there's been more doping cases publicly. Is that a sign that something's wrong, or that UCI is doing something better?
The only recent one is Tolhoek, no?
Yeah.
Quintana's relates to 2020. Lopez correct. Relates to the 22 Giro or before.
Yeah, but that's not UCI, of course, so that's different.
Ah, true. Bonamore relates to earlier.
Hessman was relatively recent.
True, Hessman was in June. Hessman was in June.
Who else? And I don't remember.
So it does feel like from when we started the podcast, 2020, 21, I don't remember us talking about people getting suspended at all. And you know what? That could have been a function of no testing during COVID.
Like yes.
The reality is testing was lower during peak COVID 2021.
Correct.
And so maybe with the ramp back up in testing, maybe Benji, the ITA is better than the previous body. Because the previous body was, I can't remember their name, CAF or something, Center for Anti-Doping Federation. And the UCI moved it to the ITA, which is the International Testing Agency or Authority. Maybe they're better at their job. Maybe they're more aggressive. Maybe they're more willing to, on a marginal case, their threshold for no, that's over the threshold and we're willing to fight it in court because we've got more money. Maybe that's the case.
Now, I'm also hoping that Luke can help me out here, but I vaguely remember reading an article recently about the amount of testing labs for doping they have in each continent, knowing that there's apparently only one registered one in Africa, in South America, and in one other continent, and that they're mainly centered all in Europe, and that to be like an actual potential positive, it would have to happen at one of those labs, which would make it... That's like a factor that I had never thought of before I read that article, and I'm really annoyed that I can't credit it because I have no remember where it came from.
LanternRouge.com, buddy. Raul really? Did a good article. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Originally,
yes.
Oh, my
yes. God.
So if you want to, about a year ago, Raul did a lengthy article analyzing the WADA anti-doping testing figures report, which related to 2021. So this is now 2.5 years ago, but it is interesting. And you can see the massive dip in samples taken during 2020, not to zero, yeah, but a big dip. And what Benji's talking about as well is there is a massive concentration of appropriate testing agencies in Western Europe, excluding the Iberian Peninsula. So France, Germany, Belgium is well covered. But then the whole continent of Africa, as Benji said, has one in Bloemfontein as of 2021. So Africa's pretty big last time I checked. And then South America and Central America has one in Rio de Janeiro. And there's in Southeast Asia, Sydney, not even in Southeast Asia, there's one in Beijing and one in Bangkok, I think. So, yeah, it's you can see the disparity. And then if the sample takes too long to get to a testing facility, it's invalid. So that's a problem. Yeah. But yeah, I'd encourage you to read that article. We'll link it down below just with some of the WADA's aggregate statistics that Raul's pulled out and looked at in cycling. Like, for example, cycling appears to have quite a lot of testing. The teams pay a lot of money for that testing, their contribution to it. In out-of-competition anti-doping samples in 2021, in all of sports, cycling had 18,000, which is 4,000 more than football. And I would be surprised, I haven't seen the numbers, but I would be surprised if there were more professional cyclists than professional footballers in Europe and the world. So so per capita, compared to, say, other sports, it's testing a lot. Yeah, yeah,
we know that. Cycling has the legacy that it's carrying. Football and other sports have never hit as hard on doping. Maybe tennis is one of those where it's still brought up quite a few times. That's the other sport I think of when it comes to doping's pretty
prominent there.
Yeah,
because big players
there.
Got done recently.
And athletics.
Is in a bad place.
Yeah.
To me, athletics feels like where cycling was in 2008.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. There's so much doping news, and I, as a viewer, obviously don't like that. I've never been of the opinion that the entire cycling world is clean. I don't think that's possible. I will never put my hand in a fire for a rider either, but it's also like...
You can't. That's on that point. Like Alexander Kamp's tweet, and then he's deleted his Twitter account and, defending Tollhook. It's like, even if you're friends with somebody,
Yeah.
Even if you're married to somebody, you're not with somebody for 24 hours a day, 365. You can't say, oh, he's a nice guy. He would never do. You don't know. So I agree. We've got to have the rigorous testing. I'm glad the teams all pay for it. I'm glad the per capita testing is really good. I'm glad, and especially moving here and living amongst the riders, you see, holy shit, they have to literally put an hour in every day. That is like a big thing with the out of competition testing, and three strikes actually not that much. But still, people are gonna try to cheat the system.
Always.
That's the reality. I'm afraid. Even in football, they woke up this week, Benji. Football woke up.
Yeah.
And Gary Neville was on their pod with Keane, and they were like, listen, when Sammy Sanchez was cooking and all these Italian guys were going super quick and they had the same doctors, we played against these guys, and at the end of 90 minutes they weren't out of breath. Do you reckon something was going on? with 10 times the prize money on offer. I mean,
fucked,
but what can they do? Gary Neville was like, I can't name the teams, I can't name the clubs, what am I supposed to do? And I feel for him.
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, it's like football fans are not going to... No one says... Remember, Brailsford comes over to Man United. And listen, Sky, the comms and what happened, like, don't pretend like you were lily white and then have all the House of Commons report come out with those findings. But then Brailsford comes over, people are like writing articles, and they're good journos, I grant you, they're good journos. Yeah. But there's articles about, you know, Brailsford and Sky and them being... the problems with Sky with doping or grey areas. Like, Guardiola tested positive twice, didn't he? And that's it. So, like, come on. I never see articles about that. So it's like cycling even gets tarnished when it goes over to football.
Yeah.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've been on a heater, sorry.
I fully agree. And it's also, I think, good that we're going through this topic thoroughly as well. But talking about cheating the system, I think we should step over to a new topic that is also about potentially cheating the system that might be put in place if certain people get their choice in this sport. Like, for example, Mr. Patrick Bro wants to shorten Grand Tours. Oh, traditionalists are crying in the viewership right now. We're losing viewers just thinking about it. But we had some comments on it. Like, you brought it up ages ago, right? The shortening of Grand Tours.
Yes, has to happen.
We've actually had people, stakeholders in the teams now, talking about it, because the whole One Cycling thing has brought it to the forefront as a potential option. Unzue was the first one that...
I couldn't believe it. Unzue? Me and him aligned?
Well, he also signed Quintana, so you aligned on that as well.
Hey. But
you're basically best friends at this point. I will say, the one too far for me is the calls for substitutions in Grand Tours from Unzue, because you're always going to have people that try to cheat the system. And if I'm a team that has a sprinter, I'm like, oh no, Caleb Ewan got ill on stage 7 in the first week, and there's now 14 stages without a sprint stage or one sprint stage only. So I got to put in a mountain domestique now. Aw, so
why
sad.
Why couldn't you just have subs? But don't even skip that and just make it like football subs. Like, you don't have to have a legitimate reason. You just say, I'm pulling it.
Intricacies come into that. What happens with GC? What happens with those riders in GC? Are they going to
be
put on the
lowest? Yeah, they go to the lowest time, yeah.
Okay, that's one thing. Second of all, that takes away the endurance side of things. So Sepp Kuss can go on an altitude camp for another week and a half before he shows up in the last week and a half of a race. I don't want to see that. I want them to get through the first 2 weeks, overcome that challenge, to be able to do what they have to do in the last week. And that's part of this fucking sport. That's the whole thing. Now, if it's not 3 weeks, a Grand Tour, and 2 weeks, then you're going to have substitutions in a two-week race? Sorry, but what are you going to do next? Substitution in a one-week race in the four-stage Tour de la Provence? Like, where's the limit? Is the limit Grand Tours with substitutions? Because that's what they're saying. But if the Grand Tours is then suddenly 14 days, then it's shorter, and I'm not a fan.
See, and Zue was talking about it because he was saying, because he's thinking about Enric Maas crashing stage one last year in Bilbao. But then I'm thinking, how much he's thinking, I want to replace him, but like, how does it help? So you're going to replace him with your ninth best rider, who's like your fill-in, who wasn't good enough to make the tour team in the first place. How much does that really move the needle for you? Like, I wouldn't say it would move the needle too much. Now, maybe he's like, well, maybe Mas can be subbed out and then sub back in for the third week after he's recovered from his injuries. He does have a legitimate point in that, well, because of the way cycling's set up, if you're 50-50 that you have a concussion in a stage race, why would you stop during the stage? Like, you're not incentivized to do that. Why would you stop so you can get checked out at a medical facility? I don't mean on the side of the road with a pen with the eyes. I mean properly checked out. You won't. So you'll ride to the finish, possibly concussed, risking, if you crash again, a serious problem, and then you'll get checked out, and then you might get pulled. But that's the sort of more serious point about what he was also saying. I'm not sure he really meant it. That I think he was more coming from, fuck, Enric crashed out, and that was really annoying for us. But I think there is a legitimate question about how to deal with injuries during stage races.
I think that I agree with that point, but I also think that that's just part of the sport. And that's more the mentality in the sport that is wrong and not necessarily the rules of the sport. As in the fact that riders, the traditional thing of like, I need to finish this race at all costs. So I've got two legs. Now I've got one leg left and one arm. I still need to finish the race. That behavior needs to go. That's not related to there needing to be a substitution role. Teams, races, riders, it should just change the mindset.
Yeah, but if the riders, they're not going to change the mindset because this incentive structure won't let them. And then it's the team car has to, but the team car might not see how hard they crash.
Yeah, but it's a team's responsibility to look after their health. And you're talking about after the stage, skipping at a medical facility, stuff like that. Sorry, but then that is the responsibility of the team, not looking after their rider's health.
The technology's got to exist here. I've been doing a lot of just throwing up startup ideas out to everybody. So here's another one. I'm sure it already exists. A helmet. So there should be standardized helmets where it has a... And rugby, they've got mouth guards that do this already. Yep. And they're using this week for concussions. Helmets that show the severity of the impact in force when it's hit the ground with a rider. And then that data is immediately relayed to an independent, to the race doctor's car. And then the race doctor says, his head just hit the ground, or he just suffered this impact. Out. Could be a solution.
First of all, I think we've had this discussion before about the actual like MIPS helmets and so forth, like those systems that helmets have to reduce inside. The impact, like the yellow thing they have in, the cushion thingy, that like reduces the actual movement of your head within the helmet or something to reduce concussions potentially. That system is not even standardized yet. The hell are we going to get to a system that is standardized with the actual sensors and so forth in it? Because then you need all these manufacturers to adapt towards that system, which they can't even adapt to the same standard when it comes to the MIPS kind of stuff, because GOSC has their own thing, other brands have their own thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, cycling brands creating proprietary components that don't work with each other, that's like the thing, right? But yeah, the reality is the helmet, sorry to be like a based helmet person, I wear my helmet when I'm riding on the road, but if you crash at 60 kph on a descent into a wall, that little piece of that thing on your head is not stopping you getting a concussion. I don't care what technology they put in it. Now, you can put in technology that relays to an independent person what the severity of that impact was and whether you need to be checked out, pulled, etc. So maybe we'll see that. I think we're going to see that in within 5 years. That will exist. Investors, contact me. I'll do your marketing. no problem. How'd we get onto that, Benji?
I don't know.
Before the pod today, I was like, we don't have much to talk about. And then
we've been talking like crazy. And we've forgotten totally to preview the race for next week. And I think that's the last thing we need to do.
I'll do rapid fire. Go ahead. Okay, Algarve is the one to watch. It's got Remco against Wout van Aert. Remco looks in absolutely lethal form after winning the Portuguese Classic yesterday. 55K solo, Liège warm-up ain't but a thing. He just, won by 2 minutes. Just doing Remco things. But there's a long TT. We'll see how he fares against Wout van Aert. Thomas is there, as well as Pidcock, I believe, for Ineos. That, to me, that really is the race to watch.
Ghana, 22 kilometers time trial, plus Alto de Foya, which is not that difficult. Mayao is kind of hard, so I wonder if he can get close GC-wise.
Ineos, last year, they had like three GC leaders, and then Martinez won out in the end. But Pidcock was cooking on Malau. He won... was the best last year. I'd like to see him there again.
I want to see a better TT.
Yes, I would like to see a good Pidcock TT, but I he'll be good on the punchy stages. That's a good battle to watch, as well as Igita and Martinez at Bora Hansgrohe are on the start list. Classico Jaén is tomorrow. It's a gravel race. It's really been shortened. There's been a lot of rain. There was snow here last night, but there was a lot of rain in the south of Spain. So Almeria, Murcia, and Jaén are all within 2 hours triangle of each other. And there was a lot of rain. So there's only four gravel sectors now. It's super muddy from the recon photos I've seen. Kuss and Van Aert there, as well as Ayuso, Wellens. I dare say UAE would have wanted a harder race to try and play numbers against Van Aert. But that'll be a good one-day race to watch tomorrow. And then there's Andalusia, which is always a pretty exciting race. Very, very hilly. Pagacha dominated it last year, not turning up this year. It's kind of weird not having Poggi dominating one of these February races, but it's Ayuso, Wellens, Soler again are the big contenders on UAE. They'll be hoping to win back-to-back years in a row, and Bahrain are sending probably the second strongest team, who have 2022 winner Wout Poels, as well as Tiberi, Buitrago, Caruso, Haig. That is a ridiculous team. So maybe they are the strongest team. That Bahrain team is ridiculous for Andalusia.
Yeah, that is true. It's quite a bit of a very strong team there as well. And like one race that I've kind of like skipped over this year in my head is Alpes Maritimes, you know, because that's one of those races where Quintana was the one that really spicing up the GC fight there. And now I feel like we're going to be seeing, those were actually good days.
Yeah.
But Alpes Maritimes and Livorno, I feel like, I don't even know what the parkour is this year. I'm not even going to pretend I do. It's like two stages this year, no?
Two stages,
Has every French race gotten smaller?
Protest, man.
This was four stages, three stages last year.
It was three stages before, got smaller.
At the start list, it's like Gregoire. I love Gregoire. Martinez.
The Groupama A team is here. Gaudu starts his season here. Martinez, Genius, Gregoire. Oh, they got a win.
Yeah. Arkea is provisionally there with 15 riders, so good luck filling that in. But Martin is also starting, Guillaume, that is.
I think Israel will win.
If it occasion Simon Carr.
True, it's his region. I think Israel Premier Tech will win. They're riding really well at the moment. Turns, Fuglsang, Uhl, Woods on the list.
Yeah.
This seems like the sort of race, like Woods won Occitanie back in the day, aka 18 months ago. I would say... watch out for Israel Premier Tech. They are riding pretty well at the moment, as well as Guillaume Martin. He is actually normally quite good in this race as well. But I would say Algarve is the one to watch. Late finishes, if you're home from work in Europe or not too early for you in America, Australia, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go to sleep. It finishes too late. A bit of a note on our cycling journey, Benji. I've got some good news for you. So you have, I finally got some, because I put the, but that's all the race news and doping news and everything out of the way. We talk about ourselves now. I've got some good news for you. I scared you last week, 190Ks. You thought it was 90Ks, the Flandrian Challenge. But Philip Cunningham sent in an email and he said, I completed the Flandrian Challenge last year, Benji and Patrick, and I really put in a training effort. No point did I think I wouldn't finish it. He did the 190 the first day, tactically. He said psychologically, good to get the longest one out of the way, and had a couple of beers that night. Now, as a contracted to Visma Lisa bike, I evidently can't do that in the middle of a stage race. So, I mean, imagine the scandal. So I'm not going to be doing that. Then they went back on the train on the second day. So bit of climbing, bit wet. He says there's not many cobbled descents. That was what I was concerned about, because if I bin it, I would be so sulky. And there's a lot of history, which I'm into as well. He said, follow the route map closely as you can miss a turn. Sometimes you go on a walking path to avoid a busy road. I rode in Brisbane, so no European cars will scare me. What was that race where the riders went on like your motorway in Belgium afterwards? I swear there's a race where there's a lane and there was like people chopping off in on a Belgian highway. Anyway, well, thanks, Philip, for the email. Does that make you feel better, Benji, about the 190 or not really? Okay.
Fucking hell. I appreciate Philip's email, but it doesn't make me feel better, because week one, I started with a perfect week of like 8 hours and a half, and now I'm stuck in Turkey where I received a bike by the organizers, which is really nice by them, like a Turkish Salcano brand bike, which I'm very curious to try tomorrow morning before I leave the country. But I haven't had time to ride because I'm at this race. So it's actually not been as useful as I hoped it would, which also means that the only training I had this week was walking through the entire city of Antalya 2 hours a day. Which
is chilly.
It is relatively hilly, but it's not like hiking in Andorra. So I got some walks in, I got some efforts in, but I'm not going to have bettered fitness much as a consequence. So I feel like I've lost a week in my head, which hurts because I've only got 4 weeks left to train. And I've got to go back to 10, 15 hours of training in the next 4 weeks, which I'm okay with. I'm looking forward to. But
join cycling plan, just pump in the days left.
Yeah. I know.
Quick plug. Oh, you could do the Batabag climb if you're in Turkey. How far away is that from you? That's the 18K 11% climb they did in Turkey last year. That's a different region, right?
Sir, can I just tell you that you're trying to send me up an 18-kilometer climb that professionals had trouble with?
Yeah, Cav was doing 30 RPM up it.
You'd have to come to Belgium next week for my funeral.
Yeah.
You just did a thumbs up. He's dancing on my grave.
Listen, I'm just trying to help you. Knockout 25k tomorrow morning. Come on, the weather looks good. It's snowing here. I'm inside on the trainer. If the weather's good, do it for me. But yeah, I'm gonna have to think tactically about how we do this, how we structure the days, because I feel like if we do the 190 first day, we'll both just be too wrecked to do 140 the next day. I really feel like, but then I think you got to do the 75 in the afternoon when you get there and do it and like it's not even a thing, and you just you do it in the afternoon. The 140, 190, I don't know. We might need some local help.
It's my time to drop the heart plug as well. I've been in Tour of Antalya for this week, and at this race, I've been vlogging my entire week. And I've told you before, I didn't feel like I was a good vlogger, but this week, I'm so happy with the content I've created. I've been able to like get stuff every single race day in a different way. As in one day I spend in a team car with one of the smaller teams with Greg Henderson as the Yezen. There's been so much there when it comes to stuff that happened in the race where I really think it's going to be a really good video. And there's other things that happened throughout this race that I can't wait to show everyone. So if you do want to see that type of content, me vlogging my way to a race with some behind the scenes content, talking to all the riders, to the winners after the stage, to before the stages, there's so much access here because, like, fun story, there's so little security here when it comes to the race, as in there's security enough, but not towards media people, that I put my camera literally on the finish line.
Is it good? Oh, that's good. That's good. I mean, I'm glad. No, it's really positive. There's race organizers who they flew you and other cycling media people out, and it's...
They ignored you. How horrible.
Yeah, but I'm boring. I'm a small little vlogger. But yeah, the coverage the race has got, far outweighs what it would have been because it's got Tietma team there, you there, me out there. So they've done a good job.
I forgot the actual plug. If you want to see that content, check out the Benji Narson YouTube channel.
Yeah, and when's that going to be uploaded?
Normally, the first video should be on Wednesday, and the other video, the second one of the last three stages, should be next Wednesday afterwards.
You've said it now, so now you've got a deadline.
Yeah, exactly.
I always learn never say a deadline. Because then shit. Yeah, anyway, that was our show today. We hope you enjoyed it. We've got some good racing. The racing's heating back up. The big stars are starting to come out. Remco Van Aert, Peacock, Poggi will be out there soon. And Capecchi's looking pretty scary. So hopefully we have no more doping news that we have to cover next week and that it all got cleaned out this week. That was one of the big storylines of this week, and I'm glad we addressed it. So let us know what you think, and we'll see you with maybe the fourth episode next week, maybe an impromptu episode this week, depending on what Remco does. Till then, ciao.